This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the podcast for the American Monetary Association. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and this is a service of my private foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation. Today, we have a great interview for you, so I think you'll enjoy it. And comment on our website or our blog post. We have a lot of resources there for you, and you can find that at AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org. That's AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org, or the website for the foundation, which is JasonHartmanFoundation.org. Thanks so much for listening, and please visit our website and enjoy our extensive blog and other resources there. It's my pleasure to welcome Eric O'Keefe. He is director of the Wisconsin Club for Growth, otherwise known as WCFG. He's a founding board member of Citizens for Self-Governance and chairman of the Healthcare Compact Alliance. Eric, welcome. How are you?
Good, Jason. Glad to be with you.
Good. It's a pleasure to have you. And give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
I'm in southwest Wisconsin, in the hills of southwest Wisconsin, 50 miles from the Mississippi River.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about what it is you do with these three separate organizations in which you're involved.
Well, I have a long history as a political activist, and nationally, Citizens for Self-Governance, our biggest project is a Convention of States, an Article 5 Convention of States effort, which is going very well, and in fact was recently endorsed by Marco Rubio and has a lot of support among people who are frustrated with the centralization of government in Washington, D.C. And this is an attempt to revive governance from the states, and it's a great way to engage with your state legislature in an effort to save the republic.
Tell us more about the Article 5 Convention.
Article 5 is the very brief part of the Constitution of the United States that talks about how to amend the Constitution. And one clause, having Congress vote with two-thirds of each chamber, and then the states, three-quarters of the states ratify. That has been used multiple times, over 20 times if you count the Bill of Rights. The other method hasn't been used, but it's designed to deal with a situation where Congress is intransigent and is part of the problem, and we do face that. So that is to have a convention for proposing amendments. There have been many efforts to get one, but they weren't really deeply, broadly organized, and they weren't broad. Ours is a broad one. It doesn't propose a convention for a single amendment, such as, say, term limits or a balanced budget. It proposes a convention for the purpose of addressing the centralization of power in Washington. So the only appropriate amendments are those that constrain, restrict, or refine the limits on the power of the federal government.
So that's your primary focus now, right?
That's the primary focus of the organization, Citizens for Self-Governance. I myself am involved in a number of different things, and you mentioned Wisconsin Club for Growth, and I've been in a long First Amendment fight with now 27 months on behalf of the Wisconsin Club for Growth and fighting something that's part of an ugly national trend of the authoritarians using the platform of government to attack people for their political activities, and that's what I've experienced in Wisconsin.
That is extremely scary. That whole concept is very scary. I mean, it's scary enough that debate is squelched and the incredible lack of critical thinking skills. I mean, that boggles my mind when I look at social media and I see what people believe and what they're saying, and they just don't seem to question anything. It's incredible, but they'll squelch debate by, calling someone a racist or, a bigot or a homophobe or, my God, you can't talk about anything anymore without being sexist or it's just amazing. It really is. What is happening with, using government resources to attack people with certain political leanings?
Start with a phrase from our Wisconsin Supreme Court, which last July not only ordered this criminal investigation shut down, but did so with the strongest terms of criticism of a prosecution team that my attorneys had ever seen. They wrote that the investigation was conducted without foundation in reason or law. That's a quote. And they wrote that it was baseless and that the prosecutors created a perfect storm of abuse of us. Now, it started this way, and this is the part that people still have a hard time believing, and most people haven't heard of it yet, so for a lot of your listeners, they won't know this, but this came to our attention on October 3rd, 2013, when there were simultaneous pre-dawn raids on family homes in Wisconsin. They raided the family homes of four different people. There were children at home in two of those homes. There was only a 16-year-old at home in one of those. It was still dark. Police in flak vests put bright lights on as if somebody might want to flee. They came in with multiple cars. They shouted at the door. They had battering rams prepared to be used. They didn't use them because they were allowed in. And then they conducted searches, which took approximately 2.5 hours, and they were seizing political documents, computers, phones. This was looking for supposed campaign finance report violations. That's it, which ordinarily, if it happens, is a civil violation. And I'll tell you why they did these attacks, because I know why they did them. They did them because these people, my colleagues, and I was a target of this investigation also, but my colleagues constituted an extremely effective political team at countering the propaganda of the union-funded left here over the Act 10 fight. And your listeners will probably remember when there were 70,000 protesters marching around Madison protesting some reforms proposed by Governor Walker. My team defended those reforms successfully in a series of elections. And after the last of those elections failed to overturn the reforms, the Milwaukee County prosecutor launched these attacks with these paramilitary-style pre-dawn raids on family homes. Outrageous, violating Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, and violating standard police procedure. We then later found out they had already seized our emails without telling us from our internet service providers. They had already seized our bank records without telling us, and they conducted basically a massive domestic spying operation outside the Constitution, outside the law, all because of our political activities.
Wow. How does the opposition get the government to do this? I mean, do they approach the district attorney? What do they do? What is the mechanism by which they do that kind of thing?
You know, Jason, I don't know all the details, but here's we have a cultural problem now in our politics, and it comes right from the White House. President Obama reprimanded the U.S. Supreme Court in a State of the Union speech.
I remember that, yeah.
Shortly after the Citizens United decision, and the left at a national level organized, and one of the big agenda items they had was what they call, pushing back on big money in politics. And by the way, one of the ironies here is the federal government spends $10 billion a day. $10 billion a day, 7 days a week, every day. That's not the big money that the left is concerned about. They're concerned about an amount of money that is less than a single day's spending by the federal government that we spend arguing about who should govern and how they should govern. In other words, political campaign and speech, where we spend less than one day's spending. And in Wisconsin, it's the same story. Our state spends $100 million a day. We don't spend that much money deciding who should govern us or how. So,
but you're talking about general spending, that just, you know, all the business of government. You're not talking about on campaigns or
elections. I'm saying, right, $100 million a day is the state budget of Wisconsin divided by every day of the year.
Got it.
The federal government budget at $3.7 trillion is $100 billion. So what I'm saying is the amount we spend on campaigning, which is 0.02%, by the way, if you do the math, is trivial compared with what the really big money in politics is, the budgets, the spending, you know, healthcare, education, roads, and all the other stuff they do. So the left is insincere when it says it wants big money out of politics. What it wants out of politics is private money. It wants independent money out. It wants to shut me up and shut you up.
Let me ask you then, you know, just straight out, are you in favor of Citizens United? Are you in favor of that money in politics, as they say?
Yeah, sure. That was a correct decision, which is people have a right to spend money to advertise their political views. Citizens United had a movie, a documentary movie, and the FEC, the federal regulators, wanted to shut it down and treated it as campaign contributions and campaign spending. Frankly, the First Amendment got it right. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of religion.
Doesn't Citizens United allow people to, or not people, but companies and super PACs and secret donors to contribute to campaigns? I mean, is that really right? I don't know. I'm skeptical about Citizens United. I agree with you on pretty much everything else, I think, but I don't know about Citizens United. So, you know, feel free to educate me and the listeners.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of misinformation out about it. It does not allow secret donations. You know, one of the ironies is I've read a lot of attacks on super PACs and their supposed dark money. Well, super PACs disclose all their donors. They disclose their donors. One of the ironies here is that we have disclosed donors, and often they're attacked in the same articles, or the same left-wing attacks will attack the dark money given by so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, it's not dark money. It's political speech money. And the campaign money we spend in this country is trivial compared with, for example, NFL spending on games. Spending on Halloween is more than we spend on campaigns. We need to be spending more on politics, and the insiders that control the permanent government, they don't want independent voices. They don't want we the people messing with what they view as their government.
But, you know, when you look at someone like George Soros, right? I think George Soros and the Koch brothers are kind of similarities at opposite ends of the spectrum, maybe, right? And they're both putting tons of money into the political machine, whether it be public relations or a zillion other issues. Please comment on that if you would. I don't know exactly what to ask you about it, but it's interesting.
Well, you know, let's just have in mind the scale. What is tons of money? The spending on the presidential election campaign season, including House, Senate, governors, everything going on in a big election year like 2016 will be. We have yet to have an election season when all of the political spending, issue ads, super PACs, campaign money, equaled a single day of spending by the federal government. Mm-hmm. They're not paying enough attention to politics and governance. And the way to pay attention is for people with resources to draw attention to issues, facts, data. So we're talking about a gigantic economy and a lot of noise and all kinds of advertising about, you know, iPhones and lotteries and restaurants and shoes. How do you get through that noise and get the attention of voters and draw out the issues?
So you're making an interesting argument. To sum it up, is basically that, look, there's all this money being spent on politics, but in comparison to the size of the economy, in comparison to all the other money being spent on advertising in general for whatever product and widget out there, this is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's insufficient. And those who have fun controlling the government against the will of the people. And by the way, voters are understanding that government is running off without paying attention to us, ignoring us, abusing us. How do they get away with that? Well, independent political organizing and speech is required to overcome the inertia of those in power. So these regulations, here's another way to look at it. Who is going to control those people who regulate campaigns and speech? I'm living it now in Wisconsin. It's always going to be the government. And who is going to be willing to take the government job regulating and looking over reports and regulating the political activities of other people? What kind of person wants a career regulating the minutiae of the political activities of other people? Not a libertarian, not a pro-freedom person. These agencies that are empowered to regulate politics and campaigns and speech always get peopled by control freak types who think they know better than us what we ought to say and when we ought to say it and how we ought to say it. It is handing power to government to impede the political activities of the people. That is what campaign finance regulations are designed to do. They're designed to protect incumbents from criticism and to entrench incumbents. And if you look at the history of campaign regulations in the country, we didn't have any in the 19th century. We went 120 years with no regulations of any kind on the campaign and speech activities. And during that time, the size of government in the United States was a flat line at about 5% of the economy. It's only when in the so-called progressive era 100 years ago, when the first regulations came in, we started to have government grow beyond that baseline, and it hasn't stopped growing since. And also, we used to have high turnover in political offices when we didn't have all these regulations. And now we have entrenched incumbents controlling our legislative bodies.
Yeah, it seems like such a simple thing that just needs to happen is term limits. The founders never intended to have career politicians. You know, they always expected politicians to be in touch with the people. You know, they would go serve for a while or they'd be part-time, and then they'd go back to their district and, you know, do their thing, run their businesses, you know, do their jobs. This whole concept of these people just, they're basically welfare recipients. People that have been in government for, you know, 30 years, it's just an absurdity. It's ridiculous.
Yes, and for those, and I know a lot, I've seen polling, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are sympathetic with the idea of having campaign finance regulations. So I want to reemphasize the point that if you change the First Amendment, for example, like Hillary Clinton wants to do, to overcome Citizens United, what you're doing is modifying the part of the First Amendment that says Congress shall make no law. In other words, the power transfer is an increase of the power of Congress to regulate our speech. That's what it means to overturn Citizens United and support Hillary Clinton and the Democrats in the Senate on that, who have already voted to amend the First Amendment to give themselves more power over us. Now, is that going to be good? Is that going to have a good result? They set the budget for the regulators. They set the parameters. There is no referee. In politics, there is no referee.
What are you saying? When you speak of Hillary, though, Hillary, the career criminal that she is, when you speak of her, do you mean that she's trying to abridge the First Amendment by not letting people put money toward the speech or actual speech?
What's the difference?
Fair enough, but I just wanted you to clarify that.
Yeah, no, the First Amendment doesn't say you can say anything you want, but you can't hire someone else to say it. It doesn't say that. It says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, etc.
So that's an interesting point. So if you hire someone to speak for you, then that's money, that's campaign contributions. It's the same thing. It's a proxy. And so the First Amendment does not allow people to abridge the right of having a proxy speak for you, a hired gun, if you will, right?
That's right. And just to give an example, Aaron, why should the New York Times, a big corporation, be able to do what it does with its political editorials, its bias coverage, et cetera, with no regulation? Does it have a superior amount of freedom to me? I don't own a newspaper, you know, but they can have a newspaper and I can't buy an ad in the newspaper.
The fact that you'd want to buy an ad in that newspaper
is
a concern.
Well, I wouldn't want to buy one in that newspaper,
yeah, right.
But, you know, those of us who don't own networks and newspapers, by the way, the newspapers have tended to be strong supporters of crimping my speech.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been in Wisconsin. So why? Because they think they're better than me. They have a special protection. They have special protection, they think. And some court decisions have suggested that maybe they have more protection than me. Is that what we want? Do we want people to have to own a newspaper to have free speech?
Yeah. I've litigated cases like this in my own business where, as a podcaster, as a blogger, I'm just as much of a media outlet as the New York Times or the LA Times, right? So why should I have any different standard? I mean, you don't have to have a license to be a member of the media. Thank you very much that you don't, you know. But in some
right.
Banana republics in either Central or South America, you got to have a license to be a member of the media. You know, that's like having a government news agency, basically, right? They could revoke your license if you say something they don't like. I mean, it's an absurdity.
Right, great point, Jason. And one of the good things going on in the country is the breakdown and the concentration of messages. We had a period, and it was really only about a 50-year period during the growth of radio and television, of very concentrated gatekeeping and voices. That America in the 19th century was not that way. There were numerous newspapers, and it didn't pay. There wasn't a high threshold to open one. Lots of competing voices, lots of noise and argument. Americans do very well sorting out the noise and the sense from nonsense. They can sort out. And by the way, you see it even in this presidential campaign. Money doesn't buy elections. You need a lot of things going for you. And we've had a lot of Senate races where the big spenders lost. But here's an interesting thing to illustrate how money isn't what determines what people do in polling or in the voting booth. The biggest spender in the Republican primary process so far is Jeb Bush. And he already started with a high name ID. And he's polling way down the field. The ninth biggest spender is Donald Trump. Ninth biggest Republican spender for president so far, Donald Trump.
Right, and he's got the most publicity, yeah.
Yeah, well, he gets a lot of publicity. But it's not paid advertising. He hasn't been laying out serious money. He's been outspent by eight other candidates. And he's in first. My point is just that money, it doesn't buy votes, and people can discern sense from nonsense. In our state of Wisconsin, the left's favorite governor of all time was Bob La Follette, leading progressive of 100 years ago. There were no campaign finance regulations when he won. So, I mean, I find it kind of ironic. But basically, at the bottom of wanting to control other people's speech is a distrust of people and a belief that you or the government are somehow superior. And look, people make mistakes, but the best way to govern the country is with free and open debate, free and open elections.
Oh, no question about it. Let me share a theory that I started writing about maybe 12, even 15 years ago, and I call it the monologue media versus the dialogue media. And basically, it's like this. If you look at all the media controlled by the left, it's the traditional old media, the monologue media, the newspapers, the book publishing industry, television, the movie industry. That's all a monologue. They say what they want, and everybody else simply consumes that media. And I know there's, you know, an op-ed page, okay, but, you know, that's a tiny little fraction of it, okay, in the newspaper. And then you look at the dialogue media, which interestingly is controlled, I'd say, by the right, the blogosphere, podcasting, talk radio, where people can call in, for example, to talk radio. They can comment on blogs and they can debate issues in an open forum. And my theory about this has always been that the ideas of the left can't withstand the scrutiny of that debate. I mean, Air America, the big talk radio network, was a total failure because all they did is say, I hate George Bush. It was just boring. You know, I used to listen to it all the time, and it was just the most vitriolic, you know, mean-spirited stuff. It wasn't a real discussion of any issues. Put a guy on talk radio, and people, callers call in, and they debate with that host. You know, someone publishes a blog, and there's a zillion comments below saying, you know, you're a freaking idiot. I mean, what do you think about the monologue versus dialogue media, and interestingly, you know, how the left and right seem to have their shares of it?
Jason, I think you're describing something very important and vital. And in fact, the reason the left, the authoritarian left, is going after the First Amendment and speech is because they have finally decided something that they're right about. And it's this: they cannot impose their socialist utopian schemes if we have free speech. They cannot. They cannot win debates. So they have to stifle. And actually, this horrid attack we saw in Wisconsin with, you know, police raiding homes to get political documents and computers, that's one effort to squelch speech, pretty draconian, using the force of law. The left is also using shame as the tool they want. They want to stifle debate. They'll use the law, they'll use regulation, but they'll also use shame and shouting, and that's what we're seeing on a lot of the campuses, part of the same disease. They don't want debate. They want power and control.
I had John Stossel on the show a while back. He's done some great pieces on this stuff, but I love the one where he talked about free speech on college campuses and, you know, how he went into, you know, express another viewpoint and he was just shouted down by the tolerant left. It's amazing.
Yeah, John Stossel did a really fine special for Fox News on the attacks on the First Amendment that first aired in late October, and one of the segments there was on the John Doe attack in Wisconsin, so I was on that with him.
What do you say about the criticism of the Koch brothers? A lot of people criticize them pretty heavily, say, oh, you know, they're controlling the election, you know, they're the puppet masters, all of this kind of stuff. What do you say about that? I don't know that much about them.
Yeah, well, I've known them for a long time, and, you know, Charles Koch was interviewed, I think, for USA Today, and one of the things he said is, I don't control anything. You know, I'm not getting the government I want. Look, did Charles Koch want Obama in the White House, just for one thing?
That's an interesting point. Yeah, but based on results, they're certainly not controlling the government. It's definitely
right,
leaning to the left.
Charles Koch's basically a libertarian, and I think he's not going to be delighted with probably with the choice for president this time. I don't think he ever has been in the past. So if you look at the agenda that he wants, which is a pro-liberty agenda, he's not getting it, and we're having a really hard time with that. Now, I think it'd be great if we did. He wants a free and open economy. His company is not allowed to lobby for privileges for that company. They lobby against regulations that affect everybody. They don't lobby to be exempted. They lobby to have them, you know, to have a free market economy, same way on taxes. So he's an upstanding businessman, and David Koch, of course, is his colleague in the business and in the political ventures. They're principled, and they've engaged in the political arena only largely the last 15 years because government was so impinging on their ability to employ people profitably, to hire more people, and it was constraining their ability basically to do good both on the business side and the philanthropy side.
Interesting. Anything else you want people to know?
Well, the politics is a fascinating arena. I encourage people to engage, pay attention. The biggest attendance events in the 19th century in America were religious revivals and political speeches and rallies. Politics and religion, that's what got people to leave the farm, go to town, go to an event. It wasn't football games, okay? And I like football, but we have an ailment in the country of disengagement from politics and thinking politics is a spectator sport. It's like when we watch a movie, we watch a team, we just watch, and maybe we cheer for somebody, maybe we don't. Politics is not a spectator sport. A, it's not a sport at all. It's about the life of the republic and the life in your community and engaging, talking to people, going to meetings, doing more than voting, figuring out issues, organizing locally. It is a fulfilling and rewarding part of life, and it really matters. It matters. We're going to lose our republic if we don't have quite a few people engaged, people who want good, who aren't trying to make a buck and only help themselves. We need regular citizens engaged in politics. That's how America was built, and that will be the only way to save it.
Yeah, interesting. Give out your website.
The best website for my activities is selfgovern.com. Selfgovern.com, and there you can get plugged into your state and ways to reach out to your state legislator and ask them to step up for the country.
Fantastic. Eric O'Keefe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
The American Monetary Association is a nonprofit venture funded by the Jason Hartman Foundation, which is dedicated to educating people about the practical effects of monetary policy and government actions on inflation, deflation, and personal freedom. Our goal is to help people prosper in the midst of uncertain economic times. This show is produced by the Jason Hartman Foundation, all rights reserved. For publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate professional if you require individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of the Jason Hartman Foundation exclusively.